you have to come up with agreement and then alignment and goals. People focus on goal. They don't think about the base part, which is you have to align on how you want to help each other, then agree, and then do it.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Modern Business Operations. I'm your host, Seth Colliner, and today I have Dr. Madassar Ahmed, who is the founder and CEO of SEM Dojo. Madassar, welcome. Appreciate you being with us today. Why don't we start? Just tell us a bit about yourself, about your background and your current role.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. My name is Dr. Madassar Ahmed. I'm a founder and CEO of SEM Dojo. We are essentially supply chain and knowledge and expert platform or marketplace, as you would call it. Why marketplace? Because we have identified about, you know, many 20 plus experts with whom we have created a best-in-class knowledge content, which is mainly courses, guides, best practices, tools, which is available to the supply chain members and community with a pretty simple monthly subscription. So the idea is to give the knowledge to as many people as possible. Why I'm doing this? Because I work for industry, mainly two companies, American company Eaton, for about 12 years. I've done every job in supply chain from buyer demand planner to logistics director and Bridgestone, which I was head of planning logistics. So what I figured is most of the people who turn up in supply chain, when I say most, mean 50 to 60%, they come from non-supply chain background, like IT or operations or something like this, or finance. And then once they end up in a supply chain job, they want to learn supply chain. And it's too late to go to uni or somebody has to pay for it. So we are solving that very specific problem.
Excellent. Very concise and clear. Thank you. So to kind of start the conversation, I want you to set up and explain a problem you've identified around collaboration and visibility and procurement. What are the issues involved? Like, to set that up for us.
So we in supply chain, we talk about three V's. It's very important, right? Which is visibility, velocity, and variation. So the idea here is to reduce variation in whatever you do, processes, systems, improve velocity so we can do things faster, and improve visibility. Now, visibility is almost a very overused word in supply chain in general, right? So you're talking about anything from upstream, which is your second-tier supplier, to downstream, which is last mile delivery, dealing to a customers, and everyone wants a visibility of everything. But if you think about the supply chain in general, it's very segmented because that's the way it's designed. You have a second-tier supplier, first-tier supplier, you have a manufacturer, distributor, wholesaler, retailer, you know, third-party logistics companies to get to the point where you get to, right? So while there's a wish of visibility improvement, the fundamental design of a very segmented supply chain stops us doing it, right? So when you talk about procurement, so there are companies that are making a lot of money in solving logistics problems, so visibility problem logistics without naming anybody. There's some few. On procurement side, when we talk about, then we are talking about mainly the buyer-supplier relationship. So to explain the compound of this problem, let me give you the couple of examples of how it's can turn out to be a big issue. So our relationship with most of the suppliers are either strategic, where we start, which is contract, you know, cost, price, lead time, all this sort of stuff, right? And then it got handed over to the operational procurement team, your buyers and the planners, who generally deals with the demand or forecast they have to create in terms of purchase orders and send it to the suppliers. Who's supposed to ship against them, right? So without any normal tool, what's our best visibility? You send an email and they send you like a spreadsheet and this is your new purchase order days, blah, blah, blah. And then what happened is you somehow forward the spreadsheet to somebody else to look into it. But the system stays as bad it was. System still thinks you're getting the date when you said you're going to get it. But supplier told you I'm going to be 3 weeks late. But most of the cases, they don't even tell you. The only time you find out you're late when you are actually expecting the goods to arrive from China and they're saying, you know what, mate, we have not really shipped from Shenzhen yet. So you're already 1 month late, right? And then after that, everything goes screwed up because the impact of that is actually I can best explain in experience to a customer, right? So when we customer expect things to be there and on time, in full, in good quality, good price. That's the basic definition of customer service. If the product is not there, right? I'm talking product here because supply chain is mostly about product, less about service businesses. That means if they don't have product, they're going to get upset. If they're going to get upset, they need to know when you're shipping next. But if you don't have the visibility of your supply chain or procurement bar, you know, or your suppliers to tell you when they're shipping, you got a big problem because your customer service will die. You will lose business, lose to competition, and they will never come. So everything I basically explained to you is pretty basic science, but that's probably the best I can explain how visibility is super important.
Sure. Okay. Well, so then the easy next question is, how do you gain visibility into what suppliers are doing?
Okay. Unfortunately, I just briefly looked into your website. I don't know much enough, but there's many different ways to do it. Now we talk about supply chain maturity, you know, for example, level one, level two, where you have some systems or not integrated systems. Level three of maturity is about you have an ERP system where the internal function is integrated. But now we're talking about level four, where we talk about integrated supply chain. That means you have some level of connections in terms of the data set transition with your suppliers. So that's the ideal way to do it, right? A basic example which I can give you, I used to work for Eaton in hydraulics, and we used to supply to Volvo trucks, right? And we have a link through EDI. EDI invented 30 years ago, still pretty established. And they used to send us their demand, forward schedule, where they used to change it. But it was good for us. So being a supplier, we have a good visibility of what they wanted, and we have to confirm their schedule and their system, which is linked with our ERP system. So if we change anything in our ERP system, it used to change at their end. It was a good example of how a good supplier and customer collaboration works. We tried to do the same thing with our suppliers. We miserably failed because none of our supplier was ready. So while the whole technology part of integrating your system or whatever current your ERP system is with the supplier, let's call it ERP system, the basic concept and science of that or the technology of that is available for decades, if you ask me, because EDI, Electronic Data Interchange, is doing it for the last 20 years, I know. It's not rocket science, right? Now the cloud has made it better and easier, okay? With the integration. So it should have been adopted faster. But here's the interesting stats. I was in the panel expert at one of the conferences in Netherlands last year. I was with a couple of CPOs on the same panel. One of them was a $7 billion electric lighting company. Don't want to name them. He said, I think he was running about a $2 billion supply chain. I think in other value, I think asset-wise, it was less than a billion. And he's got about 600 suppliers to onboard across different divisions. He said he has no visibility of 73% of his suppliers, like zero visibility. They send the information and they just hope that things will turn up. So imagine you're running a scope of that sort. So they have all the tools, they have all the gadgets. Okay, what is the reason they're not? Because it's a mammoth job. It's an absolutely mammoth job if you're working with 600 suppliers to get them on board into any tool whatsoever. It doesn't matter how easy or difficult it is. So the technology is not a limiting factor here at all. It's the change management and the adoption of that technology. It's the key success factor. So any company who will crack that issue, in my view, will have the highest chances of success. Because everybody's so focused on product market fit. I want to have a problem, visibility. I want to solve a problem. Here's the tech. Lovely. Great. But then what? Who's going to make it happen? And this is where the problem is.
Right. So I know at Tonkin, we deal with this. This is the kind of the heart of the problem that Tonkin pretends to solve, right? It's the adoption. It's getting people to use the tools. And you know, sometimes the tools are not ones that people will use. In the technology world, it's really easy to make something that works really well or that we think works well, but without thinking about how humans will actually use and consume it. That's the rub, right? So back to this is sort of the part C of that question. How do you get the suppliers to use the tools? How do you get to deal with the change management?
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin's process experience platform seamlessly wraps around existing policies and systems, allowing internal service teams to do more with what they already have. Build process experiences that are personalized for each requester, and use AI to automate the intake, triage, and resolution of every request. Maximize adoption, compliance, and efficiency with no change management and no code.
Good question. Change management. I mean, I can give you a classic BS of deploy at car, awareness, desire, knowledge, ability to fly. Okay. Ability to enforcement. Okay. The framework works. I'm not saying it's not going to work, right? It does work. I have deployed it many times, but it's easier to deploy internally than externally. Now, I'm going to give you an example what works with something we did. We deployed a simple thing called consigned inventory model. That means we wanted our strategic supplies. What was the problem? The problem was I wanted to reduce inventory we are carrying, and I want to reduce the lead time, right? Because I want to make my supply agile when I was supply chain director in Eaton. How can I do that? Because what was my biggest root cause? Because my supplier lead time was probably the longest. Our manufacturing was 5 days, but supply used to take anything between 30 to 60. Okay. So how we can cut the supply lead time? Very simple. We ask our suppliers to carry the finished product for us. That means the parts they're making. Okay. Imagine asking them to do it. They're going to say a little piss off because it's for them. It's a money. It's a working capital, right? Okay. Okay. But we said to them is following. If you do ABC analysis that, you know, thanks God to Mr. whoever come up with this. So in 80-20 rule says that 20% of your suppliers supply 80% of your parts. With 20% of parts, you make 80% of the money. Ah, yeah, I remember now. Mr. Pareto from Italy, right? Pareto principle, right? So Mr. Pareto come up with this very interesting science, which is applied to date. So we said to our suppliers that the 20% of the parts, so we said we have, again, 400 suppliers, but out of that, we have like, I think about 60 strategic suppliers who make 87% of the parts. So within those 67 suppliers, we said, okay, you supply to us 20% of the parts, which makes 80% of your spend money. Just stock those for us. Let's call it the A-class items. Just stock those for us, stock for 2 weeks, and we guarantee you sales. We guarantee means if you don't ship within 2 weeks, we'll take the inventory anyway. But on doing so, what's in it for you? What's in it for them is you almost have a guaranteed business for X amount of weeks or months. You will be our strategic partner going forward. Therefore, any new products you're launching, any new business we are growing, you will be in that because you are providing us benefit. But lastly, because if you do that, we will sell more, i.e., if nothing else happened, we will increase our sales. Therefore, we will increase your sales. And as a counter argument, we said, give me 3 good reasons why we shouldn't do this. One of the good reasons was cash flow. I said, okay, we guarantee you business, right? We're going to take the inventory. So, okay, you want to get paid early, fine. We cut down your payment terms by 1 week. Done. Right? Because we know the benefit, right? So we got an agreement commercially to all of them, right? So the lesson here is, coming back to your question here, how you convince suppliers. So if you want them to adopt any tech of any visibility of anything, what's in it for them? How can you answer that question? What are you going to gain more out of this? If it is more pain for them to go to one more website, log on, upload some share, whatever. If it is extra work for them, they won't do it. They just won't do it, right? So you have to give them some sort of a pitch that it will reduce time. They don't have to send the updates all the time. It will receive the number of calls. It will give them a better visibility of demand. It will basically, they can run some reports, open order reports, whatever, right? So just, if you explain to them how it will help them. And for me, when I think about any digitalization effort, and I want to explain to somebody being a consultant, because this is what I do and this is where I make most money, I say, I want to segregate the benefit into 2 headlines. One is the improving the customer experience. Whoever the customer is in that transition. Yeah, quicker, faster, better, you know, things like that. And the second is the efficiency part, right? Where how can we use the automation to do more with less people or less effort? So as long as I can segregate my benefit into these 2 headlines, I'm 99.99% sure I can convince anybody.
That's great. What is some of the pushback or maybe even the criticism or various setbacks that you encounter when you still try to do this, even doing it the right way and with the proper motivations? Yeah. And having empathy with what people actually need and want?
So basically, you're talking about the resistance to change, right? That's what we are talking about here.
Yeah.
I think this is where the issue is. The people who come up with this sexy idea of, I want to do something technical and digitalize, they actually don't do enough work in understanding current state of map. They honestly don't. And I'm a consultant myself. I just, when the even customer's trying to tell me something, I just try to think, okay, you know what, you could do better and things. But over the period of time, I've learned this, that you need almost like an independent thought process to really understand what they're saying. So basically, you go with no prejudgments. I mean, don't think people are stupid, basically. People are not stupid, right? They, if they're doing something for like 5 years, it might be working for them. That's what they're doing it, right? So assuming that somebody used Excel for last 5 years to do his planning is stupid, is a bad idea. That's what I'm trying to say here. It's working for him. He's not stupid. Unless you tell him there's something better than Excel, that person gonna use Excel, right? So this is what I'm trying to say here. It's to understand the current state of map of if people who are the process owners, not the bosses, the process owners who actually do the work, the Sallys and the Michaels and the Abduls and all, who actually sit down and do the work, what they do, how they do it. And then from then you pick up the challenges they face. And if you really are a good listener and understand problem better, then you can figure out the challenges they face. And you can use those challenges to pitch into your story of digitalization. Okay, Abdul said this, Sally said this is the problem they face. Now with this tech, this tool, this strategy, we can help them. And then the story will work.
Excellent. That's great. Well put. Then we're moving into the boilerplate section of the interview. What is the best advice you've ever received in your career?
Oh, I received many advices, but I will give you this. In the career, there's only two people are responsible for your career. One is you and one is your boss. Most people do the mistake. They want to really grow, make more money, become director, whatever. They can't really figure out what they want. They don't write down. If you ask people what they want to be in 5 years, which is probably the most stupid question, the reason maybe people don't answer that very well is they haven't really decided the career plan is. So I'll just take the next best opportunity. So it's like, yeah, whatever that somebody will take me, I'll go somewhere. So what's your strategy? Right? So that's one. Second is when I say your boss, and this is where the whole people use this word called these days on LinkedIn or social. Toxic, which I think is pretty in thing, is stupid, I think. There's nothing toxic. Actually, if you don't get on with your boss, there's only one winner in that. It's your boss. Never assume you're going to get your boss sacked. It just never happened. Unless your boss is stupid enough and don't do something absolutely stupid, which is like punch you or things like that, which nobody does, right? So your chances of getting your boss sacked is 1 out of 1,000. Now, again, people said you will... People leave bosses, not jobs, which is also true. So you have to be lucky enough to work for somebody who's a good boss. Most people are not. So in my career, I worked for 6 bosses. 3 were good enough who helped me to grow my career. That's why I know actually what I know. I went to leadership program. My boss helped me fund it. He gave me promotions. He made me a manager of people. I still don't speak very good English, but I was in England and he made me a manager of people of almost all white English people, which was a big risk on his behalf, but he took it. So I'm thankful for that person. I can name that, Leo Hayes. He saw that I've got something in me. I have a desire. I want to grow. And he wanted me to take challenges to do it. So my boss helped me and gave me these opportunities to do it. But why he did what he did? The reason he did what he did, that I was able to explain him, this is what I'm good at. I'm committed to you. I'm committed to your success, i.e., I'm committed to my boss' success. I'm going to make him look good. So if you can help me in my ambition, I'm going to work harder. So it's a triangle, right? You have to come up with agreement and then alignment and goals. People focus on goal. They don't think about the base part, which is you have to align on how you want to help each other, then agree, and then do it. So I used to get promotion every 2 years. And why? Because, of course, I was pushy and I was ambitious and I was a nightmare to manage. That's all good people are. But I had the bosses who knows how to manage, find the balance between ambition and getting the most out of me, right? And that's it. So the moral of the story is, be very clear what you want in the goal, career, because if you're not clear, nobody else is clear, guaranteed. And don't think your boss is your manager. Actually, the second person who can really help you most is your boss. Maybe you don't like that person. That's, take it aside. Work with that person to achieve your next position.
Very good. And then in closing, is there anything you want to promote or share about yourself or your company? And if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
Perfect. I'm going to start with the last bit. You can email me, mudassir@stmdujo.com. Just Google Dr. Mudassir Ahmed with MUDDADSSIR. You will find me. I've got 91,000 followers on LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, I'm happy to connect with you on almost all social media channels like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, in fact, I'm on TikTok as well. And my handle is @mudassirism, which is MUDDADSSIRISM. Now, so what we do, our motto is we want to help supply chain thrive. Okay, big statement. How we want to do that? We want to do that by providing a very high quality knowledge content, which is cutting edge in terms of supply chain logistics, digitalization. We have a lot of courses on that. S&OP at a very affordable pricing. We want to provide the best practices. We have provided a lot of self-assessment tools, which consultants charge thousands of pounds. We are developing tools like inventory optimization and so forth. And we have 123 experts, which you can hire for any problem you can provide. So what I say to people that you need your ERP system and you need STM Dojo. So for any supply chain problem in terms of competency development, right, we are here to help and develop, right, and assist you to solve your supply chain problems in terms of processes and content.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time. I know you're halfway across the world right now and it's late for you and it's comfortably early for me. So I appreciate you making the time.
Thank you, Seth. It was a great conversation with you and I wish you a good day.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/MBOpod. Thank you for listening and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.